NBC Monitor News on the hour, Jack Welby reporting. Henry Kissinger returned to Washington this afternoon after a final briefing from President Nixon on resign. The hour's top story, Henry Kissinger receives final instructions from President Nixon before returning to Paris for more private peace talks with North Vietnam's Le Duc Tho. Jack Welby, NBC News.
Hi there, this is Gene Rayburn. No, I'm not mixed up. I know I'm not your Saturday night host on Monitor. I've done my stint. But there's a surprise coming up for you because your host for the evening is... Oh, I can't tell you. It wouldn't be a surprise if I told you. Stick around and find out who it is. Meantime, Bob Mitchell plays Where or When? That's not the question. Who is the question?
This is Monitor, this is your weekend show. Stay with Monitor, Nationwide Radio.
This is Monitor, and this is Ed McMahon. With a very special assignment, I'm about to introduce the host of this segment, and it's a real pleasure for me. Welcome to Monitor, Mr. Frank Sinatra, Jr. Welcome aboard, sir.
And, Colonel, I want to thank you for the nice introduction, and I want to say that I know how many years that you have been here at this desk at Monitor, and I'm going to try, for the few hours allotted me, to keep things running in the good old-fashioned tradition.
I just think it's keep it tidy, keep the coffee to the left.
Right, coffee to the left, no rings on the table.
That's
right,
it.
I know.
You
right.
Got it. How you doing? What do you think you're... going to feel like when you're taking over the helm here for several hours?
Well, I'm going to feel like, Ed, something rather special because I can remember when Monitor started. I can remember when NBC Weekend Radio was just NBC Weekend Radio, and I can recall, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was about 1955 or so when they first put it together.
That's right.
And
Bob Hogan is applauding, so you must be right.
I can recall being in California and hearing that coming across the radio, and I said, now, I wonder what that noise is. And I figured maybe they were playing War of the Worlds with Orson Welles. And I realized that it was the new system of radio that had been developed by the network just for the weekend. And I said, isn't that wonderful, the way they've changed the programming? Now, they have interviews now, and it's, a kind of a different premise.
I remember the early... I still listen to the early days myself. In fact, I was building a pool house down in Philadelphia, and I would spend the day listening to Monitor and putting up the battens and boards and the 2x4s and the shingles and whatnot. I spent my day listening to it. It was quite a thrill for me to host it. It was a big ambition of my life. So I welcome you aboard. I'm here if you would like to. I can be your first interview if you'd
like.
I'd
love to
interview
you.
You can ask me any question in the world.
And I want to ask you some questions that, as you have said to me before, maybe you've had many, many times, but things that I would like to know about because I'm curious, and I'm sure that anybody who might be listening to this interview might also be curious. Everybody knows you, Ed, as the man who's on The Tonight Show with your pal Johnny Carson. It's been a household word for as many years as the show has been running. How did all that come about? How did you get the position on the show?
I had a 5-minute audition, really, for another show, a daytime show called Who Do You Trust? I went to meet Johnny Carson at the Little Theater, and I remember I thought that the interview went very badly because we greeted each other, and if you know Johnny, you know he's a very tidy man.
That's
he doesn't waste words or waste time. And he spent most of the time looking out the window on 44th Street.
That's such
while we
a
were
good
talking,
feeling. Yes.
And I was looking out the same window, you know, I was looking out at the people, and he said, what have you done, so forth and so forth. And 5 minutes later, the thing is over. And he said, well, thank you, Ed, it was nice meeting you. And I leave, and I know I've blown it. I haven't gotten that job. And I waited 2 weeks, and I was supposed to go to Europe with my daughter. And I finally canceled. The last minute, something was telling me, you know, you have a feeling in your life,
you
a premonition or something.
Your phone's going to ring.
And the call came in. They said, you start Monday, October 13th. That was 14 years ago.
And you've been on The Tonight Show with Johnny for all of that time.
10 years.
I see.
Well, he's made 6 months of it. He's got a unique contract. He's off any month that has a working day in it.
Any month that has
a working day.
I mean, he works very hard 2 days a week. He needs a 5-day weekend.
Now, you know, he's only off no more than a Dean Martin or any kind of a major show like Laugh-In or something. 13 weeks. But it's spread out, but we kid him about that because it seems he's away a lot, you know.
Joey Bishop had said that to him. He said, Johnny, I know how hard you work. He said, you take off legal holidays, Catholic holidays, Jewish holidays, and you're the first performer to ever take off Halloween. But you know, Ed, the one thing that has impressed me about your work, especially on television, one of the things that has always impressed me whenever I see you on The Tonight Show is the fact that for what was once a man who was brought about to be second banana, read commercials and the like, you are now an integral part. The beginning of each and every Tonight Show begins with you and Johnny speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often thought you must be tremendously proud of that, the fact that you've changed the image of what the original assignment was.
Yes, I am proud of that, and it's worked out very well for us. In fact, Johnny has been most complimentary in private areas where he would introduce me or something, saying that that's the lift up, that's the leg up on the horse every night that gets him rolling. And it is nice, and I like it. We never discuss what we're going to talk about. We never say that.
Spontaneity
and
is very noticeable.
Oftentimes I'll trick him because I'll look and I'll know he's upset or something's troubling him. And I remember one night I knew he was very upset about something. So I looked at him, and just before I get started, I interrupt him. Sometimes it looks like I'm interrupting, and I'm purposely doing it to catch him. And I said, you've got that funny little look in your eye tonight. And he says, what? I says, there's a little glint, there's a little devil in you tonight. I can see it, and I changed the whole... So we had to live up to it. And the other night, we did a thing. We have this great thing called The King is Dead. Have you ever seen us do that? You know, the old joke.
I haven't seen. My favorite is Carnac.
Carnac. Well, Carnac is great. But this is the thing where he takes a glass of water, and he toasts, and I say, the king is dead. The king is dead. Long live the king. And he goes to take a sip of water. And just at that time, I also play the messenger. And I run in and I say, the king lives! And, of course, he spews this water all over everything.
Place, right.
So the other night, it took me 30 minutes to get him to do the king is dead. But I said, tonight's the night for the king is dead. But it's a funny role, but it's a role I like. I think that it's a role that I can
see
handle.
That in.
But I love it because he's out there. The onus is on him. The weight of 90 minutes of great entertainment hangs on his
correct.
Shoulders. Now, if I can help him and propel him and get him rolling, once in a while we'll do a piece of shtick and he'll say, it's not much, but it was a minute. And it's really...
Right, that
and so well, that part I love, and thank you for the compliment.
Ed, I know that so well because when Joey Bishop used to have his 90-minute program at ABC, I was, at that time, the youngest person to ever run a 90-minute nighttime show. I used to be your competitor with Johnny a couple of times in 1969. I was 24,
wow,
and I was hosting the Joey Bishop show. And it's amazing how when you're a guest on a program like that, as you know so well, it's one thing. But when you're sitting behind the desk, that 90 minutes can be about 100 years.
Right.
And it's very, very difficult. And at the time on that particular program, I didn't have an Ed McMahon. So I know how Johnny depends on you on television, and I know that he leaves many things in your care now, and I think it's great that that you've grown into it over the years like that. You know, I mean, what can you expect from an old fighter pilot?
Old Marines don't give up.
That's
Listen,
right.
I've got to give you one piece of advice if you're going to be hosting here. There's only one thing. Of all the things they've told you, forget
right.
everything they've told you.
I see.
Never mind about when the news gets on. Never mind about that. Don't worry about the commercials. Just mm-hmm. do them as best you can.
Okay.
Put your heart and soul into it.
You know what kind of a laugh you just got from the booth?
I know they worry about that,
but
we're sold out. Listen, the one thing you got to remember, now just watch my lips. Thank there you. Are thousands of people waiting to hear these words.
Right.
And it's not good night, my love. It is
okay.
as follows. Now, you want to say it with me?
I'll say it
All
with
right.
you.
You're on the monitor beacon.
Hi, everybody. We're back. Frank Sinatra Jr. here with Saturday Night Sounds of Monitor. At this time, folks, it is 19 minutes after the hour, and I'd like to play a record for you that comes from a very talented man who is an Englishman, a man who I met one evening in Las Vegas. He's had tremendous success in records since our meeting, and indeed, he's no stranger to radio, especially in this country. This is Elton John, Crocodile Rock.
Biggest kick I ever got.
There's Elton John, brand new record. And now from rock music, we'd like to take a look ahead to a mission that's going to be collecting rocks on the moon, Apollo 17. Here's a report from NBC's Peter Hackis in Washington.
If you happen to live within 500 miles of Cape Kennedy, Florida, and if the sky is clear next Wednesday evening, there's a good chance you may see Apollo 17 as it takes off on the final manned Apollo voyage to the moon. Draw a 500-mile circle around the Cape that swings northward through Wilmington and Charlotte, North Carolina, then west through Atlanta, Georgia, and southward to Pensacola, Florida, then down over the Gulf of Mexico to Havana, and eastward to include the Bahamas. The fact that it's to be a nighttime launch means folks living within that 500-mile radius, an area three times the size of Texas, may just see that bright ball of flame as the 8 million pounds of thrust of the primary booster lights up the sky. Those boosters, by the way, have been used eight times to launch the mighty Saturn V, taking men to the moon. Eight times there's been a letter-perfect launch. Six of those flights deposited men on the moon's surface, 12 Earthlings walking and lately riding where no man in history has ever been. This will be the last, at least for the next decade or so, unless the Russians decide to see what's on the moon firsthand. But it's not the end for American manned space exploration. There'll be three launches into Earth orbit next year, the first one April 30th. Then in 1975, we'll have that joint U.S.-Russian flight, again in orbit around the Earth, with cosmonauts and astronauts switching to each other's capsules through a tunnel. Next on the drawing board, the Space Shuttle, in the late 70s, a vehicle that can be used and reused to put satellites in orbit, to repair them from time to time, even to go up, bring one back, fix it, and take it up again. Then, along in the late 1980s, after we've developed a nuclear-powered rocket booster, it's off to Mars. So Apollo 17 isn't really the end. More than likely, it's only the beginning. Peter Hackis, NBC News, Washington.
That's quite a sight, incidentally, ladies and gentlemen. I've seen it in two different localities, by the way, once at the Vandenberg Air Base in California and once from Cocoa Beach, Florida. In the middle of the night at launch time, it seemed as though the sun were coming up. Incidentally, for those of you who may not happen to live within that 500-mile circle around Cape Kennedy that Peter Hackis mentioned, you can follow the flight of Apollo 17 by tuning in NBC radio coverage beginning at 9:40 p.m. Wednesday evening. And now back to music. We'd like to play a song for you by probably the most talented lady in quite some time. Now, she writes her own music, records it, and she sells it wonderfully. Carole King.
Stayed in bed all morning just to pass the time. There's something wrong here, there can be no denying. One of us is changing, or maybe we just stop trying. And it's too late, baby, now it's too late. Though we really did try to make it. Something inside had died
There's Carole King, wonderful success, Too Late Baby. We'd like to play for you, ladies and gentlemen, a touch of a record right now that you haven't heard yet. This is a man who you'll be hearing live upstairs when we go to the Rainbow Grill in just a little while. Here's Larry O'Brien and his orchestra. There's Larry O'Brien and his orchestra. Reminding you once again, folks, you'll be hearing Larry live just a little bit later on when we take you up for our show upstairs in the Rainbow Grill. Stay with us. We'll be back after a break from our NBC stations across the country. Hope you'll stay for more of Saturday Night at Monitor. This is Frank Sinatra, Jr. Monitor gives you 2 for $5, a couple of tunes with no interruption for 5 minutes. I think you'll feel a warming trend because the Seals and Crofts are doing Summer Breeze, followed by the Ventures with Summer in the City.
See the curtains hanging in the window in the evening on a Friday night. Little light is shining through the window, lets me know everything's all right.
Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing the grill, the jasmine in my mind. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing the grill, the jasmine in my mind. Paper laying on the sidewalk, a little music from the house next door. So I walk on up to the doorstep, through the screen and across the floor. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
Smile waiting in the kitchen, food cooking on the plates for two.
Here's Monitor now on NBC.
Monitor it is. Warm welcome to all of you out there from coast to coast. This is Frank Sinatra Jr., and this is my Monitor debut. Feels kind of good, incidentally, to be on the longest-running hit in the history of weekend radio. One thing, a lot of nice people are dropping by. One of them is a fellow I've wanted to meet for quite some time, Monitor's movie critic, Mr. Gene Shalit. Yes, he's the one you also see on NBC television, the wild mustache and the electric hair. Now, I happen to be a real movie buff, and I think Gene's reviews are humorously incisive. So I'm looking forward to hearing his reviews on a couple of new films. And that's coming up right after Sammy Davis's brand new hit record, The People Tree.
Hey, wouldn't it be nice to make a people tree? The likes of you, the likes of me. We can do it very easily. We barely even have to try. Let a little time go by, and pretty soon, before we know it, suddenly the two of us are one, two, three, and there we see our people tree. Soon the score is up to four or more as other little branches grow. That's the way it's meant to go, and there's no way I know to slow it. Evidence beyond dispute of all our mutual attraction. Nothing is as lovely as a people tree. I think that we would all agree. Of the miracles that God created, rated number one would have to be the people tree.
There's Sammy, of course. People Tree, big record. In the studio with me at this very moment is a man who spends more time in a dark room than anyone I know. And that's not a put-down, believe me, because Gene Shalit is a movie critic whose reviews are enlightening, if not inspired, and he sees a whole lot of pictures. Gene, glad to see you, glad to have you with us. And what brings you to Monitor tonight?
That elevator, which I thought would never come. I'm really glad to be here. You know, it's really not right that I'm in dark theaters all the time. I wish they were, but there's light on the screen a lot, and I have to look at that. And I'll tell you about a couple of things I've seen lately. You want to hear?
I'm just waiting.
It's always a pleasure, Frank, to watch Robert Ryan and Jean-Louis Trintignant, even though I don't pronounce it very well. But I'd rather watch them in a movie than when I did see them in. They're in something called And Hope to Die, a cripple story script about gangsters led by Robert Ryan and aided by Jean-Louis. One of the movie's major faults is that it's been directed by René Clément, who has apparently used the let's-flip-a-coin method to decide how they're going to shoot the next scene. There's Ryan and his on-screen girlfriend, Leia Massary. The plot has something to do with gypsies chasing Jean-Louis across the Atlantic Ocean, Ryan's gang planning to kidnap a gangster's mistress and a talking doll by using a fire engine inside a skyscraper. There's reality, this movie. There's also something about Aldo Ray and the Hood, who is his partner, is a guy who carves chess pieces and acts as if he's in check. And Hope to Die has two attributes. Ryan's performance is cool, commanding, professional, and Tisa Farrow is nice to look at if you put your fingers in your ears. But Frank, cross my heart, and Hope to Die looks like a movie that was made up as it doesn't go along. There's another movie that makes that one look good. Some movie makers are so bankrupt of ideas that they're reduced to remaking remakes of remakes of remakes. Ad infinitum, ad nauseam, I'd rather stay home. The latest is called Dracula AD 72. AD evidently standing for another dog. This movie is distinguished by the performance of a person named Christopher Neame, who might want to have his ears checked. Surely, when Mr. Neame thought he heard his aptitude counselor say actor, the counselor was really saying tractor. This movie begins with a group of young London youths who, being unable to perform adequately in a movie, go to an abandoned church, where a blood ceremony leads to Dracula, which leads to the conclusion that the whole enterprise is a grave mistake. Someday, Frank, the real Dracula is going to show up, and he's going to bite all of these producers and the directors right in the neck.
Well, Gene, I got to tell you, I'm glad to see you enjoy the pictures. And incidentally, I hope when the time comes that I make some of my movies that you don't review them, incidentally, because I'll be afraid.
Oh, no, don't be afraid. Have any of your relatives ever been in any of the movies?
Yes, I have had a couple who have appeared on the screen. That's correct.
How'd I miss those?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps maybe you were being bitten on the neck at the time.
Hey, did you ever see that girl in person? You were related to her momentarily.
And which one is that?
What's her name? I got to find it. Tisa Farrow. I never heard of her before. Is that Mia's sister?
I believe it's possible.
Very, very pretty girl. I mean, anybody who looks like that, you can sit through the movie knowing what she's saying. You know, you want to run to the popcorn stand, but it's not her fault. She didn't write the script, but she has a very lovely face.
Oh, that's fine. Jean Shalit, ladies and gentlemen. Jean, of course, is a Monitor regular. And here's a young lady who we've also heard a whole lot from on the show, Miss Carly Simon. Carly Simon's latest, You're So Vain. Speaking of things current, folks, Guy LeBeau will be here shortly to bring you right up to the minute on sports, and he's really on top of the sports scene. So stay with us. You're on the Monitor Beacon. It's 12 minutes before the hour. This is Monitor, and I'm Frank Sinatra, Jr. We have a little time before Guy LeBeau gets here. So right now, folks, once again, we'd like to let you hear a little more of Larry O'Brien's brand-new album soon to be released. This is an original song written by my guitarist, a fellow by the name of Vic Fouquet from Louisiana, and it is called Scatter. Thank you.
everybody. This is Guy LeBeau, the Monitor Sports Desk. This commentator has been handed a perplexing story by the owner of the Oakland Athletics, Charlie Finley, and I'll give you more about that later on. In the meantime, just a little while ago, USC beat Notre Dame 45-23 and has the undisputed title as National Champion of the Year. The National Football League revealed a little while ago that a player turned in a former teammate who offered him a bribe to hold down the score in three games last year. The player retired last year. Naturally, no names have been revealed, and I feel it's much too bad that the Football League is allowed to keep its sources secret. A news reporter is not. In college football, Richie Glover, just the very best college middle guard who ever lived and who plays for Nebraska, has won the Outland Trophy as Best Lineman of the Year. I located him at the Playboy Hotel in Florida just a little while ago to see if Richie is happy.
Yes, it is. You know, like I'm going to have worked for it all year. Since last year, since Larry Dickinson had won it, you know. So I said, I'm going to go out, win this award myself, keep it in Nebraska for 2 years, you know, show them we have the best lineman in the country.
And when it he did, and I predict Richie Glover will be the first player drafted by the pros this year. And the story I promised a little while earlier. You may or may not know that the world champion Oakland Athletics traded away slugger Mike Epstein for a relief pitcher to the Texas Rangers. I'm not surprised. Mike, although he was one of the guys most responsible for the Oakland winning of the pennant last year, fell on his face in the World Series. Well, maybe he really fell on his head because he did a very dumb thing. Here the A's minus Reggie Jackson were making a sensational team effort against Cincinnati, winning the series. Team morale was very high, and it's exactly at this time Epstein chooses to sulk and have an argument with manager Dick Williams about his habit of benching him in late innings for defensive player Mike Egan. Epstein was reportedly loud and repugnant. He was also stupid in not knowing that owner Charlie Finley figures no one is above that club. Finley has traded other players at their peak when they've made crude social errors, and I knew at once Epstein was a goner. Still being a pest, I called Finley this afternoon, and I asked him how did he dare trade away Epstein, who had knocked in 26 home runs. Where indeed do you replace 26 home runs in this terrible baseball market? This was Charlie's cackle, and please, as you listen to his answer, note what happens at the very end.
Yes, it was all because of an injury to Gene Tennis, which we discovered after the World Series is over. The team doctor advised us that Tennis would require major surgery if he was to catch next year. So that necessitated moving Gene over to first base. And made Mike Epstein expendable. Mike Epstein did one heck of a great job for us this year, and we certainly hated to see him go.
How are you going to replace 26 home runs like that?
Well, we really believe that Gene Tennis is very capable of hitting anywhere between 20 to 30 home runs.
I know that you like frankness. During the World Series, and we did an editorial panning Mike Epstein for this, after a game which the A's won. Hello?
Hear that? I think I touched a nerve. I was going to ask him whether Epstein was fired because he argued with manager Dick Williams. Let's check to what happens again.
During the World Series, and we did an editorial panning Mike Epstein for this, after a game which the A's won. Hello?
Well, obviously, Finley is ducking my question, but I won't duck what he said. He said Tennis would make up for Epstein's 26 home runs. He must be kidding or crazy. He had only five last year. He said Tennis had an injury that was going to prevent him from catching again. I checked two top persons in his front office. Neither has even heard of a minor injury to Tennis. Apparently, as I said before, somebody is fibbing. A big fib. And it ain't me. Guy LeBeau at the Monitor Sports Desk.
Guy will be back tomorrow, everybody, with more sports news for you. Right now, time for some more music. This, of course, is the follow-up record to his sensational hit, which was called Alone Again Naturally. Here's Gilbert O'Sullivan, Claire.
It couldn't be no, but try as hard as
There's Claire, giggling for us at the end. And that's Gilbert O'Sullivan, of course. Coming up, ladies and gentlemen, more from Larry O'Brien's lovely new album. Here is I Want to Make It With You. Larry, as we leave him for the moment at the end of the hour, this is Frank Sinatra Jr. once again reminding you folks, a little later on this evening, we're going to take you upstairs to the Rainbow Grill, and you'll hear our show live over monitor, and we'll be right back after this very, very short break.